Minute shout for it.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I'm an addict. When I've been asked to do this chair, I jump on it. I was like, yes! Then I told my sponsor. My sponsor's like, wait and see what's going to happen. And that's what's going to happen. First of all, welcome to NA. If you knew, you never, it's your first meeting, second meeting, you're not sure about it. You're thinking this is a bit too weird. You're thinking, what am I doing here on Friday night? Welcome. That's exactly where you have to be. And that's the best things happened to my life. So I wish you the same. And a big thank you for the people that have been before me, because if it wasn't for you guys, I would be dead. This is not to be dramatic. I'm Italian, so I'm dramatic. But it's in my blood. It's true. Now I get it. I got a disease that is incurable. So if I let my disease run, it's gonna kill me. I got different disease. I'm HIV positive, I had cancer in the past, and I'm quite clear that if I don't take my medication, I will die. So it doesn't make, but with addiction, it took a lot of relapses to get this. It's like, I think I know better than you. It's like, you're clean, I know better. As you do, as a good recovering addict, I make note, because I was cheating. I shouldn't swear. I'm trying not to swear. I make notes because I thought, if tonight I give you what has been given to me for free, I'm happy, because that's the best things happened to me. Another question, since I came to recovery, I never questioned myself, was I born an addict? What is an addict? To be honest with you, I thought, actually, I like to be an addict, because if I was an addict, I wouldn't have recovery. So that's simple to me. And this journey has been the best things happened to me, because it allowed me to understand better about myself and how to live. Because when I was born, like everyone else, it's not that you're born and you've been given this manual. Here we are. Yeah, right, mate, go, up and go. And I always felt this since I was a child. Now, I'm Italian. I was born in this small little town in the middle of nowhere in Italy. And I always felt different in a sense, but what it was different about me, it was the fact that I never felt comfortable with my own skin. And I really believed it was because where I come from, I was quite poor, my family. I'm coming from a family of addicts in denial, so they don't know they're addicts. I didn't have a traumatic childhood. I was surrounded by a mother that was very loving and caring, a father was an alcoholic, a good alcoholic. Those alcoholics, they smile right in the face, they don't talk. And when you hug your dad, smell of this wine taste. And I grew up with these things where I didn't know how to interact with people. So when I was a child, basically, I start using fantasy as a way to escape my reality around me. So my sponsor told me, and now he's gonna hear this chat, so I need to be honest, told me to say this. When I was a child, my fantasy was to be Wonder Woman. That was my fantasy. And I grew up with these things, that whatever you gave me to escape what I felt, it was okay. It wasn't until I was 13 that I discovered sex. It was my first big way out. So when I discovered sex, I used sex as the only way to escape the way I felt about my family, about myself, my mother, my absent father. And my experience 30 years ago in this village in Italy, it wasn't sex in a loving, caring way. It was truck drivers, married men, priests, and I was 13. And the thing is, because I felt so unlovable within myself, I thought, you know what? I got you. I'm gonna use this as a power over you. So I will go and have sex with you as much as I can, and then I will go over you with this power. Mm-hmm. I came on doing this for years, and I realized that sex things didn't work anymore. So I was feeling this emptiness inside. And I thought, you know, it's like, this is not working anymore. What do I do now? And I found another great escape, which was my body. I became anorexic, and that was painful because I told you I'm Italian, huh? You can imagine in Italy what this means, you know? We feed that. My mom feed, mangia, mangia, devi mangiare, mangia, mangia, bambino. And that was my escaping. It's like, you force me, I see you. And I degrade my body even more. Forced myself to starve, vomiting. And when that was enough, I thought, you know what, that's it. I had a bit of a pretty woman moment. I was like, I need to leave this town. This is too small for me. I got big things to do. And I flew to London. When I came in this town, in this city actually, I was 21. I never got drunk before that. I never used any drugs. So, my first drugs was this. I was invited to this party in Wood Green. That's another thing. I went there, there was these guys, and it was I'm not gonna say what color, what, but it was like heaven to me. And this guy said to me, have you tried this? I said, what is that? It's like, give me this bottle with ta-ta-ta. I was like, I don't know. So I smoked that, and I was like, oh my God, this is so good. And for the first time, very first time, I felt this kind of, you know when you go to a radio, and this radio is so loud, and for the first time I felt this radio going like, mm. It didn't go, but my mind was less loud, less and less loud. And I thought, wow, what is this? I thought, I can't be graphic. I thought, is this guy or is this thing? And so I asked him, what is it? Oh, it's crack. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, so that was my introduction, my class introduction to the world of drugs. I started with crack. I didn't go halfway, no, kind of yet. I started with crack. And my life progressing away, it took out a short because it's a long thing. I just kept on running. If you're running from yourself, and you substitute one for another, sex, man, food, drugs, there's nothing will fill this hole inside you. And I tried everything. I tried with my career. I'm a sexual health nurse. You can imagine that, how did it go? I tried anything, but what happened was in 2004, my dad got sick, came back home and went crazy, became bipolar. And the guilt of abandonment, I felt I abandoned my mom and dad. I couldn't bear it. So what I did, I kept on injuring myself until I became positive, HIV positive. And the year after that, I developed cancer and I was told that I have 2 months to live. At this point, I thought, you know, you can imagine this. You're running from yourself and you've been told you're 27, so you don't have nothing to live. I remember it was in Royal Free and I cried and I thought, what did I do? I had this big dream. How did this go wrong? I survived. I came out from the hospital, and when I came out from the hospital, again, I couldn't say out loud that I was scared. I was scared to death that cancer would be back. I don't know if any of you had cancer before, but a lot of people think having cancer is difficult, but the year after, it was hell. Sneeze, cough, I will run, scare. So I keep inside. I was like, I'm fine. Until I went back to the only things that took this nose down, which is drugs. And I don't believe, personally speaking, I don't believe that my addiction feed on one specific drug. My addiction feed is a beast. So beasts feed on anything. Like my mom said about men are like animals, feed on anything. My mom has great point on men. But when I find my drug of choice, I remember that night. That night was this. This guy came over, he told me about these drugs. I said, did you use that? No. I said, do you want to try? Yeah, how do you do that? Oh, you bang on, you inject it. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds a great idea on Tuesday night. Yeah, why not? I mean, tomorrow I need to go to my client. I go, I call your clinic in the morning. So I think it's a great idea to bang on Tuesday night. And that night, it was the first night, people had different experience, but it was the first night when I had this. Everything was gone. My fear, my guilt, my shame, my sorrow, my hate, my self-loathing, everything was gone. It was the first time when I thought, I'm never gonna stop this. You know, this moment of revelation, I think you all have this. It's like, what was I until now? God, you, thank you. And I really thank God that night. I said, thank you for this gift. What happened there, I don't need to go to my drug use, but I went through 5 years of using, going to work, being completely crazy, surviving, overdosing. And come a point where after your third overdose, the counselor from the cancer treatment came and see me and say, Abramo, or that was my name at the time, it's like, what do you want? And then I cried. I said, I don't know. I don't want to go back to that fear, but I can't stop using drugs. It's not just the wanting using drugs, it's the fear of stop using drugs. So she said to me, have you thought about Narcotics Anonymous? So that was my reaction, my queen reaction. I thought, okay. So I thought, maybe I should go. So when I'm gonna die, they're gonna be like, oh, he was such a good man. He went even to NA, oh, bless him. Then I thought, oh, maybe I can go to the stage. It's like, hi, my name is Abraham, I'm an addict. Oh, hi, Abraham. So I said, okay, let's go. So I choose the gay meeting, girl. So let's go to a gay meeting. I identify myself as gay man. I went there, it was a Monday night. I dressed completely in white, like Snow White, literally. I went to this meeting, and the first person who comes to me is this guy that I shot for years. And it's, in the last 2 years, I bought me like a plague. I was like, oh, that bitch. Oh, sorry. So I was like, hi. And I look at him. I stayed, I shared, but to be honest with you, I didn't hear this message. I just felt more isolated because I thought, you guys look so well, I'm a mess, nobody really understands me. What I did, I just ran. I ran, I went home, I cried, but you know when you're on the road where you are so alone, what do? Or you go back to using drugs, or you carry on where you are. So I went to another meeting, until one Saturday morning, I went to Westbourne Grove, 9 o'clock, another time it was 12. And there was a proper blocker meeting. So I went there, and there was all this proper man career. Oh my mate, oh my fella, come on, give us a hug. So I went there, and my hormones went to the sky. I was this old straight man. I was like, Jesus, oh my God. It's like, okay, let's focus here. I stayed, but more this man were sharing really honestly, and more I started having this spin in my head, and I felt so shaky. I was like, fuck. So at the end, I shared, it was my first time where I shared my true self, and I said, my name is Abraham, I'm an addict, and I can't stop using drugs. I don't know what the fuck to do. I can't tell anyone, and my life is a mess. That's what I said. So at the end of the meeting, this guy came over. Never forget this guy. He was this tall, barely up to here. And he was like, give us a hug, mate. So he hugged me. He hugged me down. And you know when somebody hugs you, you're so uncomfortable. I said, okay, all right. And he didn't let me go. I was like, you think, okay, well, this is a bit uncomfortable now. I can't even feel you with this belly between us, but I was like, okay. And then what happened there, it was this, that more I was pushing away, and more he wouldn't let me go, and more he wouldn't let me go, and more I start melting inside. And it was the first time that I just let go. And I just started crying. I felt like the first time that my dad hugged. My dad never hugged me. So I felt like somebody saw me, saw my pain, saw me, not saw what I was presenting. And I kept coming back from that meeting. I took my first commitment as a greeter. I thought, okay, you know what? I need to get over this fear of straight man, so let me get a greeter. I became the secretary, and I started doing everything that was told to me, apart from one thing, being honest. I thought that honesty was to tell the truth. I didn't get the fact that honesty is to tell your vulnerability, to show what really is going on inside you. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. There is nothing more painful than being in recovery, doing the steps, doing service, and keep the mask on. And I carry on doing that because I didn't get what should fill my void. I thought that my void would fill by service, by coming to the meeting, by doing whatever. But even that didn't feel this, because I didn't get what was that until I ran, and I relapsed. I was 14 months clean. George, you're gonna love this. A guy from Essex came to my flat, tracksuit, and boom, I relapsed. And what happened there? I have to come to terms to the fact that I didn't have what it was request, honesty. So I went to George, my sponsor, said, George, I don't know what to do. And George's like, well, are you ready to be honest or what? Do you want to carry on suffering in recovery? So that's what I did. I started being honest. I started telling the truth. I started telling the truth about my gender. I was born male. I never felt this way. I wanted to be a girl. I'm never gonna be a girl. I wanted to change my gender in recovery again, to run from myself. I removed my body hair, you name it, I've done it all. I started sharing the truth about my struggle with my parents. I was 1 year clean and my dad died. Now, this is how my dad died. I was having this Skype call with my mom, and my mom had this phone call. It's like, oh, hello, 1 second. Oh, one second, yeah. I said, what? And she started screaming, my mom is in Italy, and I was here. And you have to hear your mom crying like a baby about your dad that is just dying, and you have to call your own brother to tell him that your own dad is dead. That It was when I had to find what was missing in my recovery, which was God. I thought that I know what my high power was. In early recovery, I thought my high power was Lady Gaga. I thought my high power would talk me through Lady Gaga's song, which in part was true. Then I thought that my God was my sponsor. Again, when my dad died, you know, when you wake up in the morning, you have to go to work, and my mom got sick, and she was in hospital with pneumonia, and your dad is dead. And you're thinking, you go to meeting, you share your pain, you pray, and you don't feel nothing, nothing. And you're on the tube, and you're thinking, you are on the verge, you're thinking, what do I do? I'm clean and I'm getting crazy. Where are you? So that's what I did. I opened this book I was reading and I prayed for the very first time. Not like on my knees, oh God, please take my away, my life. I just prayed. I said, God, what do I do? So I opened this book and this is like 50 life lessons. So that life lesson was the so-called pain of today, will it really matter in 5 years' time? And I thought, okay. And I carry on from this point on. I start doing what I heard for years in meeting, to pray, fake it to make it, even if you don't hear anything, because I thought I was special. I would say my step three prayers. That's how special I think I was. And I was like, okay, I've done it. Feeling nothing whatsoever and carry on with my day. So I start praying in the tube. So from Camden Town to Archer, where I work, I pray every morning. And what I feel, it's this. I pray, I close my eyes, I do my step three and seven prayers. And I feel this tingling coming from my head down to my spine. And I feel like my dad and God is hugging me. And this makes me feel calm, loved, and enough. Because that's what I always looking for. Feel enough. Feel fulfilled. That's in the last 2 years of my recovery when I start getting this meaning. There is no man, there is no steps, there is no meeting that can fulfill this unless you find your own high power. I'm not saying high power need to be God, it need to be your own high power. Steps was where I start to unveil what was wrong with my behavior. I was a pathological liar. I came to recovery and I told everyone that I was Jewish. I was born in Bethlehem, in a toilet. Yeah, that I had a dead brother. That I was sexually assaulted, abused. I was going around showing my genitals to everyone because that's what I thought I was worth for. When I started my step four, I shared this with my sponsor. I was so scared that my sponsor would look at me like, you. My sponsor started laughing for like, at the end of it, I said to George, stop now. I mean, seriously, stop laughing. But what step four did for me, it unveiled something that I wasn't aware of. It wasn't much about my behavior. I could see my character defect there. I can see the repeating patterns. But what I didn't see, what other people did to me. I couldn't really accept that I was neglected as a child. I didn't accept that some people hurt me. Because you incorporate as an addict, I said, I deserve this. I deserve to be hurt. I don't deserve to be hurt. Nobody does. We deserve to be happy. We deserve to be loved. We deserve to be fulfilled. I've got 3 minutes.
Four.
We got 4 minutes. All right. So, 4 minutes. I was trying to think. When I done my step 6 and 7, I see my character defects. And my character defects are very difficult with mine. All our character defects are difficult to be identified because I was like, that's no. That's yes, that's no. I'm a people pleaser. I lie because I don't trust people. I sabotage relationship because it's easier to be rejected rather than being approached and loved. I don't believe that you're gonna stay with me. When I was 1 year clean, no, when I met my sponsor said to me, doll, oh, my sponsor called me doll. I love that, I love that, I love that. Hello. And I call my sponsee babies. Hello. Hello. Two of my sponsee are here. He said, doll, I will love you until you be able to love yourself. And my reaction was like, yeah, sure. Right. I'll give you 2 weeks. 2 weeks and you're going to run. He didn't. He didn't run. He stayed. And through the steps, through step 6 and 7, I start to see that I can change. I can't remove my character defect. But God can be with me in this. I can do my part and let it go. And it works. Not every day. I mean, seriously, no. Not every day. I'm not an angel. That's for sure. But what I have now, I have self-worth. I love myself. You know when I heard people 6 months clean or 3 months clean? I know that sounds really judgmental. It's like, oh, I love life. I love myself. I love myself a little bit more today. I went through a journey where I accept that I'm gonna be a girl. I know I'm a girl inside. I'm not gonna change my body. I accept the fact that my name is Amanda. Amanda means self worth of love. That's the reason why I choose this name. I accept the fact that this is my body. It's gonna be my body. It's the best things I ever had. I accept the fact that one day I have a call that my mom will die and I have to deal with that. But I have recovery. I got the steps. I got God. I got my friends. I got my sponsor. I got my sponsee. And this is my family. I never had this before. And, you know, if anything I can pass it on tonight is that if you're new or if you're struggling, please just stay. Step forward, carry on. There are days when my head is telling me that I should just relapse, you know, that I'm a piece of what, and this is not worth it. But that's my head. No feelings kill you, feelings pass, and when they pass, they come back. You know, I finish on this. Every time we say a moment of silence to remember why we're here, you know, in the last, I've been clean in January, well, I would be 4 years in January. I've been recovered for 6 years. In these 6 years, I saw people kill themselves. I had my first sponsors in prison because of this disease. I saw people murder other people because of this disease. I went to so many funerals. But then, I traveled the world. I went to convention. I wear dresses outside. I wear makeup. Life became from my flat to my syringes expanded like this boom. So, if there's anything, I just wish this to all of you. Thank you.